Craig Baumler, you have a premiere with the Arizona Opera of Riders of the Purple Sage.
And it's not an officially premiere. It's a reading of Riders of the Purple Sage. It's a first draft of Act One and Act Two. This particular reading will be with piano and music stands, and it'll be in their brand new space. It's the first performance in their new space there on Central and McDowell. It'll be with eight singers. Four of them will be doubling as chorus as well as, and then playing, you know, secondary leads. And then the resident artists of Arizona Opera, which they get by national auditions, will be my leads. Okay. And they will show the piece off as a, you know, a reading for the Acts 1 and Act 2. And then we'll ask for audience feedback.
Well, this is a process that playwrights go through. Musical theater goes through.
Everybody in the theater pretty much goes through this. I think much of our opera audiences will not be familiar with this. Phoenix Theater, which does a summer series of new works every summer, right. Everybody's really used to that, and that pretty much sells out. I mean, they're used to that whole process of, you know, workshopping and you know, feedback and everything. And that's really the world I come from. So I'm wanting to treat this opera like that. Mm-hmm. It's so useful to have, you know, in the theater, the second character is the audience.
Zane Grey, you know, for those of us who grew up in Arizona, we used to march up to his cabin, and, you know, he was
right.
A legend around here. This book goes to 1912.
Right.
Had you read other Zane Grey, or did you?
No.
You fell onto this one.
Well, and the way I fell onto it, my partner and I were going to Payson. We were hiking, and they had one of the 3 days of rain that they have, you know, up there. And I thought, well, I guess we're not going to hike right now. It seems we're across the street from the Zane Grey Museum, so I'll let's go there. And then at the end of it, there's all these movie posters with, you know, some sort of famous old actors in it. And I thought, well, this is great. There were about 25 movie posters. And I thought, well, this is interesting. So I came home that night. I kindled Zane Grey, and about 28 novels came up. And I was reading them, and I saw Riders of the Purple Sage. Again, this is not a piece I knew. And I thought, well, that's fun. It's rhythmic. It's evocative. It's sexy. I said, I think I'll read that one. I read it, and I was 3 pages into it, and I went, wow, this is operatic. And I was 10 pages into it, and I thought, boy, if Verdi were alive, he would seize upon this piece. And then I sort of finished, and I went, I think I have to write this opera. So really? That's really how it happened.
3 pages in, this is operatic. Some way in, you realize, I got to do this. So where do you start? Do you get on the phone to the person who writes the book with you?
I did a treatment of it. I was raised on those Metropolitan Opera broadcasts, those Texaco ones back.
Right.
And Milton Cross, of course, was the MC of that. Well, you know, he was very excited and excitable. And he would put the stories up there and make it so exciting just to hear about him. And then, you know, I had a book of his, you know, to follow the operas, and I liked that. And I thought, I'll write this like a Milton Cross treatment. And then I called a friend of mine. His name is Stephen Mark Cohn. He is a wonderful, wonderful composer, but also an excellent writer. I am not a writer. But I said, are you interested in trying this out for fun? I said, there is no money involved. This is just us having a good time. We've written a lot of things together just as pals. Mm-hmm. And he said, I would love to. And so he took my treatment and essentially, you know, read the book and then took the treatment, and we diverted from the book as one will in an adaptation. And then I called another friend of mine, Candace Evans, and she directed the Romeo and Juliet last year for the Arizona Opera, and also will do the Bohème this year. Mm-hmm. But she was kind of, you know, is a very up-and-coming opera director and has been an old friend of mine. She choreographed and assistant directed the Three Redneck Tenors, which is a whole other story. Anyway, I called Candace and I said, would you like to, is this anything you're interested in? And she said, she read the book. She goes, oh my, yes. The importance of these readings is that it is raw. Is the storytelling correct? There is no costume. There are no costumes. There are no lights. There are no sets. And this is the most apt way of seeing this material is the storytelling clear? Because that's really what you want to do, is tell a journey for your audience.
The idea being that if it's sound, when you dress the characters, when you dress the stage,
it'll pop.
Then it pops, yeah.
That's
if,
right.
If it doesn't hold up, if Bohème doesn't hold up as a story, forget it. Just move on.
It's absolutely.
Just, yeah, right. When you're writing a song, you're looking at words or crafting words to go perhaps with a melody. You're going to craft a melody to the word.
Same thing with opera.
Okay. So when you're reading this libretto that Stephen's given you, are you looking at it and hearing things, or are you looking at it and say, I really can't do that. You got a line with seven steps in it.
Mm-hmm. We've done that before, and he agreed that he would overwrite, and I agreed that I would be able to cut at will.
Okay.
And then as a musical theater guy, when we got to some things, I personally like scene and aria. I like a scene, and then I like a tune. I'm just going with what I know as an audience I like, and audiences like tunes. And they like high notes. You know, when we were waiting for that beautiful, you know, B flat to come out of the soprano, either floaty or robust. But, you know, it's a very exciting thing when that happens. And we look for that in our Verdi and our Puccini. That's why we're attracted to the theater. And this opera provided ample opportunity for those things to happen. So then when we got to a couple of the duets, I said, let's go to musical theater forms here. AABA song form.
Okay.
And I said, let's do these song forms. And in Surprise Valley, which is this sort of Garden of Eden that Zangré sets up in one scene that becomes very crucial to the trajectory of this opera, we decided that those people in that world, they rhyme a bit more. In this world, it heightens slightly.
Interesting. Okay.
Because in this world, it's not like the other world. And so we were able to, you know, just do slight rhymes, implicate, you know, a more musical theater forms and not musical theater styles, because there's no jazz in this, for example, but more musical theater forms, and it just heightens the whole situation. Hmm. So that's what we did. So this and Steve and I, you know, he's written musical theater too, so we were able to have that common language to talk about. I said, let's move more into these, you know, stricter forms here.
When you're thinking of those moments, the audience wants, you mentioned, you want the scene, give me the payoff is the aria, you know, give me something I can mm-hmm. just sink my teeth into. That can be in context of the opera where you're taken away in the moment. Are you ever mindful of saying, I want to have them leaving remembering this one melody?
Absolutely.
Okay. One more than one, or is there one you throw in?
Well, once the opera is done in its present form, for the reading, people will see Act 1 and Act 2 only. And Act 3, in our synopsis, we said, y'all have to wait and see. Act 3 is not done. I think when the opera is done, at this point, we've calculated we have 12 set numbers. And that would be a quintet, six arias, four duets, something else
uh-huh.
in there. And then we have Zangré writes these magnificent horse scenes where you are, you know, galloping out. And there's one scene where he's going out into the sage to, you know, check out the rustlers. And it's just so vividly told. And then there's a scene, the big one, which is like, you know, 15 pages long, of stopping the stampede and the death of one of the horses from riding too hard. And it's just amazing. And I thought, well, clearly, you know, we can't put a horse on stage. So we are having these horse interludes is what we're calling them. So when you hear the Ride of the Valkyries, for example, do you know where you are, right?
Right.
You're good with that. Curtains down. You don't need to see women in helmets. That looks stupid. Curtains down, right?
Yep.
And you hear the Ride of the Valkyries, you go, oh, all right, okay. So there's stormy, and there's horses, and it's exciting. And then the curtain comes up, and ho-yo-to-ho, there we are. You know, in Britain's sea interludes, you know, in Peter Grimes, we obviously don't put the ocean on stage. But Peter Grimes says, I'm going out into the ocean. I'm going out into the storm. And people are saying, no, don't do that. And he says, no, I'm going to do that. And he rushes out into the storm, and the curtain falls, and we hear the storm sea interlude, for example. We hear three others as well. But and then when at the end of that sea interlude, the curtain comes back up, the scene has changed, and he walks in, and we're all content that he was just out in the storm. So there are three horse interludes. The first one's a shorter one. The second one is the big, what I would call the, if there was an excerptable concert piece, it will be that one.
Okay.
And then the third one is, I call, you know, in homage to Wagner, the magic fire music slash horse interlude, because Jane sets the farm on fire, the ranch on fire at the end, and they ride off into the Surprise Canyon.
Is there a theme, a musical theme, that reappears? Is there something that says...
Yes. The part of me that likes scene and aria, conversely, also likes leitmotifs. And Wagner didn't write scene and aria. He wrote, you know, through composed... I mean, in the later works, in Flying Dutchman, there was a bit of scene and aria, but which, by the way, Arizona Opera is doing next year. And so Wagner wrote these leitmotifs, and I have leitmotifs for every single character. I think it's a really good framing device. I think it's great to hear the character related. I think it's great to transform that motif as the character him or herself changes. So
for this, stand-up reading where the audience gets to be part of the thing and say, you know, what do you think? How are we doing?
Mm-hmm.
What was Candace's role here?
Well, what she was able to do was, because she is all about the theater, which is what I like about her. But she also knows this is extremely theatrical. We're traveling here. The character's changing. And this now is an opera moment.
Okay.
And an opera moment is when you stand and deliver, you know, when you're waiting for the aria. And she goes, and now we're moving on, and now an opera moment. And then she would also, she really, really worked on character with the singers. She goes, this is where the transformation takes place. This is where the line in the libretto. And then she questioned us. She says, this seems not quite right here. Or is it possible to move that or get rid of this? Because I think that this, you've said that over here, and I'd like not to hear it here. So she was also acting as dramaturg. But, I mean, she's saying now move to stand. You know, we have 4 music stands and 8 singers.
Okay.
So what will happen is, and then there's chairs behind them, and they will go sit down. And then, you know, 2 people will be off on their own world. So they'll be at stand 1 and stand 4. In Surprise Canyon, it's our tenor-soprano love duet. Of course, you've got to have that in the Garden of Eden. And then, you know, by the time, and then they're off in their own little worlds. And then by the time that duet's over, they've moved to stand 1 and stand 2, and they're looking at each other. They're not looking out. So, you know, you get the sense of where that is. And that all had to be choreographed.
Mm-hmm. When Candace is doing this, when she's saying, you know, the idea of you said this here, can we get rid of this or can we move it? This is all collaborative. That's why you've asked her to be here.
Theater is the most collaborative of...
But you understand that's hard for people to get their head around, because usually you're protective in a business workplace of the work you've done. You hand it off to somebody else, and it comes back and looks different. It's like, what the heck did you just do?
Don't get me wrong here. I am proprietary, but I also recognize that that's no good means to an end. The collaborative process is how this works. Theater is collaborative by its very definition. If the creators of the theater refuse to participate in that collaborative energy, it isn't going to happen. You know, in this particular case, you know, we've invited, we've even gone further. My friend Christy Atwell, who won the Emmy Award for her work on her video for the bringing of water to Phoenix and the Roosevelt Dam and the history Salt River Project.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Christy is a really good friend of mine. And at the time, Arizona Opera had said, well, you know, we could do these horse interludes with the curtain down, but we've got video. So wouldn't it be kind of more interesting with this new technology to explore that? Well, Christy's a videographer. So I called Christy and I said, are you interested in talking about this? And she goes, oh, yes. And so she was. And then she said, why don't you give Ed Mell a call? And she gave Ed Mell a call. And she said, why don't you? And so we went over to Ed's house and asked if he was interested in being on the project. And he said yes as well. So the minute Christy and Ed got on board, there was a conversation, which is too involved to go into, but they were talking about how the opening could work. And I went home and went, wow, so now this prelude is going to be different. I mean, the minute I heard a visual or a talk of how an opening could work, it excited me, and I changed the way I did this. Candace will say, you know, what if we do this and this and this? Directorially, I go, oh, good. You're going to need some music for that. Here's that.
So the collaboration begins. You go to Stephen, you go to Candace, and one by one you bring people in, and then you get the opera involved, and then there's Ed Mell.
Well, and it's not just that. And, you know, right now, you know, we don't have any have any need for Ed actively, mm-hmm. because the opera has not absolutely come on board to do this. They've come on board for this first reading, And then they will, you know, weigh in, you know, and there's a whole bunch of elements at work here. You know, can they afford it? New works are expensive. Can they, you know, is it a subject they want to take on? It's not without its controversy. So there's a lot of elements at work here. So
the Lesker collaborator will be the audience. What's the best thing that can happen after the audience sees this and you ask for their feedback? No, maybe the easier and better question is, what's the worst thing that can happen?
Nothing.
Yeah. It's not a bad review. It's that there's no interaction, right?
Well, it's not even that. I mean, I originally started to write this for fun, so I still am. Mm. I mean, everybody else has kind of gotten on board. They've come on board easily. It's got a lot of good energy around it. I don't think the audience is going to be passive about this. As I said, it's got its controversial elements. And Zane Grey did not shy away from those. So, you know, that being addressing religious fundamentalism, addressing guns in society, and addressing women's roles in society. The minute you do those three things, somebody's going to have a strong opinion. The only reason to, to retell a story is if it has something contemporary to say. And that's what I found so germane about Writers of the Purple Sage, is that it had so much to say about today's world. I thought, wow, we have changed so much, and in some ways, so not.
Well, it's exciting for the community because you've got an opera in a new space, or opera company with a new space.
And this is their first foray into new operas in their history. You know, even if they just stop here, it's bold and courageous for them to have done that.